The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice.
Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns. If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911.
In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
This episode contains discussions of trauma. Listener discretion is advised, and please take care of yourself while listening.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still. I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Welcome to Scrambled. This is Nikki Shields, and I'm here with my co-host, Chad Douglas. Hi.
Hello.
We are just coming off a two-part series with Dr. Jessica Patel, child psychologist, talking about trauma and how it manifests and some of those things related to trauma. And she referenced ACEs in one of those episodes. And I had this moment of realization that we had never talked about that on the podcast.
And I think the reason is when she mentioned ACEs, I went, whoa, what's that? And ACEs, as she told us, stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. So can we start breaking that down? What defines adverse experience as opposed to just inadverse experience? Is that
well,
a word?
It is now.
All right. Well,
let me tell you a little bit about how it came to be, and then we'll break down what those experiences are and why they're relevant. So in 1994-ish, and then for the following years, there was a study called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. And the theory was that the more adverse childhood experiences someone had, the more likely they were to have health problems and, you know, life stress and those kinds of things later in life. And so, you know, things like chronic diseases, poverty, things like that, they were wondering, like, is this tied to early childhood experiences? How much do those kinds of things contribute to future difficulties? And so they did a study. It was through the Centers for Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente, starting in 1994, there were 17,337 adults enrolled in the study. And I think it was like two-thirds of the participants had at least one adverse child experience. And that could be, so here's where we get into what those are: abuse, neglect, some sort of trauma, witnessing scary things, those kinds of things, at least one. And many had more than that. And so they did the study to determine, did the number of ACEs or adverse childhood experiences contribute to later in life health and psychological problems? And the study suggests that that is very much the case, that the more they had, the more likely they are to have problems later on. So the thing about ACEs is they're extremely common. Everybody's had something adverse or difficult or unfortunate happen in their childhood.
Right.
And, you know, abuse and neglect are one sort, but other types of frightening or potentially threatening things like we've talked about in our episodes about trauma could be considered adverse childhood experiences. And those things are, you know, according to the study, somewhat predictive of your future health.
So. Okay. So like we've talked about a lot with this focus on trauma is that it's all relative, and what you may see as an adverse experience, I might not. And I'll give the example. You mentioned neglect. And I thought, you know, I grew up in the 80s. And so I'm what was called a latchkey kid, where both parents were working. And so the kids would come home from school and likely would spend a couple hours by themselves. So you learn to be a little bit more independent and everything, where some people could say, you know, if you leave a child at home for a certain amount of time, that's neglecting them, or it might be scary for them. I don't feel like it was. So am I making sense there and saying what one person sees as adverse, the other person might not?
Absolutely. That makes sense. It really is the child's perception and, you know, based on the child's support system and how they perceive things, you know, different events may or may not be, you know, experienced as adverse or traumatic. But the more of those kinds of things that you have, the more the study suggested you are likely to have health, you know, issues, chronic health conditions, or experience other life stressors down the road. The big question with this after the study came out was, well, what do we do with that? Can these things be prevented? Do we know, you know, how do we make sure people have a reduced chance of these long-term illnesses or life stressors? And the good news is that the study resulted in lots and lots of efforts towards prevention, right? So being able to provide families with more support and financial options and, you know, daycare and childcare and, you know, intervention and family assistance and counseling and mental health care, all of those things go a long way towards reducing the risk of adverse childhood experiences. And, you know, again, the fewer of those you have, the better the outcome. So that's kind of the science behind it. And so when Dr. Patel and you and I were talking about trauma in those previous episodes, a lot of the, you know, a lot of the traumatic things that kids experience would be considered adverse childhood experiences. And that's what that term ACEs represents.
All right. Fascinating stuff. You mentioned that how they perceive things. And I kind of perked up a little bit because right before we recorded this episode, there was an episode upstairs at my house because one of the kids had spilled something and it was like, you know, they were upset by this. And my wife and I have long been, if something spilled, man, that happens. We've never, ever, ever gotten upset with the children because they spilled something. Granted, this was spaghetti sauce on the carpet, but still nothing. But this child's perception was everything is just going wrong in my life. And now this happens. So it's how they perceive it, because in the grand scheme of things, all right, you spilled spaghetti on the carpet, we clean it up and we move on. But to them, it was very upsetting.
And so in this case, I mean, I would say that experience probably, you know, will get filed away as an unfortunate event that took place, but it won't be an adverse childhood experience because nobody threatened him. Nobody screamed at him. Nobody made him feel less than because he'd had that experience. And a lot of times, and I wish I had a copy of the questions that they ask right in front of me, but they are really looking at, did you feel, you know, humiliated? Did you feel insulted? Did you feel threatened in any way? Those kinds of questions are more, are those kinds of, sorry, not questions, those kinds of experiences are more likely to make someone, you know, file something away as more of an adverse or traumatic event. And so when a child has something happen, if the adult's response is, oh, okay, no big deal, buddy, we'll get that cleaned up, and you have empathy for the emotion that he's experiencing because of what happened, then, you know, that has the possibility of like just helping, right? It just, it helps him to file that away in a healthy way and doesn't allow it to become something worse that he holds on to.
And I like how you're using the term filed away, because it's if you're able to process that, then it's not going to become an adverse experience. What do you do then now if you're a parent and you know your child has an adverse childhood experience, whether it's a car crash or something happens, a divorce, anything that can happen? What can you do to help them not make this a traumatic thing as much as you can?
Yeah, so that's where therapy comes in. I mean, of course, I'm a little biased there, but that's where, you know, getting them some help to process that experience and figure out the way that it did impact them and grow from it. And also, you know, if parents were involved in the adverse childhood experience or somehow contributed to it, because we've talked about this before, we don't always handle things perfectly too. And we might be unknowingly contributing to how they file it away. Us addressing how we deal with things and learning new ways to handle it can also reduce that. I did want to share one more thing about the ACEs, the specific types of things that we would be looking for, just because I think that would be helpful for folks.
Sure.
So it could be things like sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, neglect. Did you kids who had to maybe not wear clean clothes, kids who have limited resources, don't know when they're going to eat their next meal or where their next meal might come from, experiencing separation or divorce. Those things happen quite a bit and people don't necessarily see them as an adverse childhood experience, but depending on how they go and how the child experiences, it very much can be. Witnessing your parent be, you know, abused and, you know, knocked down or seeing gun violence or knowing, you know, that the adults in your lives are using weapons in that way. Alcoholism, growing up with parents who abuse alcohol or street drugs, growing up with someone with significant mental illness or having a household member attempt suicide or having family members that go to prison. All of those would be defined as adverse childhood experiences that could potentially contribute to a child having more difficulties later in life. So I kind of hinted at what it could be, but then I wanted to give a little more detail about the types of things that they're looking for when someone is being screened for that.
Sure. And I would assume too, a death of a close relative or, you know, a parent or something obviously would be an adverse childhood experience for sure. So a kind of a general question, and see if I can phrase it in the form of a question, is if you have a child who has had an adverse childhood experience, if the parent knows it and everything, but what about those adults that are in the next circle out from that child's mm-hmm. relationship, teachers, coaches, aunts, uncles, friends, parents, what can they look for or how can they help a child who's been through one of these ACEs?
This is 100% why it is so important for those working with children in any capacity to have at least a baseline understanding of the impact of trauma, of understanding how trauma affects people, and not only just trauma, but like what we've been preaching on this podcast, that, you know, responding to a behavior with curiosity and empathy is a far more safe and effective way to help a child if they've experienced something like this than if we treat it like it's a bad behavior. You know, a child coming to school, having a bad morning, being a bad mood doesn't mean that they experienced an adverse experience before mm-hmm. they came to school, but they might have, and you don't know that. And so that's why I think, you know, all adults today should be informed of these possible risks and just recognizing how that stuff shows up in behavior, just like what we talked about with Dr. Patel in the last couple of episodes. If our instinct is, oh gosh, that kiddo's having a rough day, I wonder what's going on, we are better set up to be helpful and help get that child in the right direction than if it's, oh man, that kid's on one today. Like, it just goes better if we have a little bit of curiosity about what might be behind the behavior, what might that be communicating, because then we have the ability to help the child advocate for themselves, mm-hmm. tell us what's going on. If something threatening is happening in their life, they're more likely to tell you if you enter into the space with compassion. And it just takes a little bit of awareness and a lot of asking questions before making decisions and judgment.
Why do you think it is that most adults don't? It's as simple as asking questions. I mean, is it because everyone feels like they're so busy, or it's not my kid, so I shouldn't? And I'll speak for myself. There's a lot of times where I'm like, you know, I'm happy to ask questions and stuff, but I'm also like, that's not really my place because you're not my kid.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of exactly what you just said, which is it's not really my business. It's not my problem. It's not my place to ask those questions. But I also think it's the first thing you said, which is we're busy and tired and focused on our own selves, you know, mm-hmm. and so we don't really want to take the time. We also don't want to know, right? Like if we find out something's going on, now we're responsible for making sure something is, you know, handled. And that's scary. We don't want to be in a situation where we have to make those mandated reports and things like that. But it's so much better for the child's future if something like that is going on, for us to take that approach. And so I think if you're going to work with children, you know, you have to be prepared to like ask hard questions and potentially handle difficult situations with kindness, even if you're irritated or even if you're having a tough day. And that's the other thing. We bring into it our own stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe that teacher had a really hard morning and experienced their own adverse situation before they got to school. And so their patience for the child who might also be having a hard day is going to be limited.
You mentioned anybody who's working with children. And whenever you say things like that, I obviously think of my children and their ages. But if you're listening to this and you've got a younger child, a five-year-old, a six-year-old, that kind of language is going to be different toward them versus a 14-year-old, an 18-year-old. And I kind of go one step further in the whole, like, because both of us have children in the junior high age, Nikki, and it's mm-hmm. like, they can be not so nice sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I think you have to be a special type of teacher to want to teach that age group. And I think the folks that do, for the most part, are equipped to do that because they might have that snarky sense of humor or something. But sometimes it's hard to tell when the kid's being just mm-hmm. a smart aleck versus this is a cry for help.
Yeah. And it is. And I don't know that I have any grand advice for how to sort of siphon through, you know, or sort through those situations to determine, you know, and it's just, that's why we just have to be human all of the time with everyone, because we don't know. And, you know, the safer the environment that we create for children today, the fewer health problems they're going to have down the road. And if that's kind of the foundation, as a teacher, Sunday school teacher, coach, you know, therapist, anybody that's working with children, if that's kind of your mindset, then, you know, it's going to be just easier to begin there. You don't even have to think about it. And you know, people like that, Chad, like folks that just, they wouldn't, they would immediately just instinctively know, like, oh gosh, this kiddo's having a hard day. What can I do to help? Right. Absolutely. They're just hardwired to respond that way.
Yes.
It is like something that takes practice though. They didn't probably start there. And so same for all of us, you know, if you mentioned like junior high students being, you know, a little rough sometimes, a little difficult to engage with. As a parent, it can be very, very hard not to personalize what they're saying, and you know, not to jump to your own conclusions. But no, I just don't think we get anywhere by assuming the worst.
You know? Now, I'm going to assume you didn't write this study that you've told us about, so you might not be able to answer this. But was there any reason, like physically, they could tell us why folks with ACEs had long-term health effects? Like, was there damage, physical damage done to the brain or the nervous system that caused these issues?
Well, as you said, I did not write it. No, I think that's kind of where the research has to continue. It's like, what is happening that's making these experiences predictive? Is it high levels of stress hormones that are just running rampant and creating more opportunities for like diseases to develop? Is it being underfed? Is it, you know, the like psychological, like physiological changes in your brain after a traumatic event that actually causes other things? I think the cause and effect is tricky there. And ultimately, you know, I can't really speak to the science of it other than to say that the harder childhood is, the less safe you feel in childhood, the more experiences you have that would be considered adverse, you know, the higher the probability is that you'll have issues later. And I want to share, like, they aren't necessarily like you're going to have, you know, cancer or physical diseases, but you you're more likely to experience, you know, things like obesity or, you know, difficulty with like hormone function and other things like that. So it like can affect your body in so many different ways. And I think that's what research has yet to figure out, is all those processes, how those things impact your biological functioning to result in those outcomes. And, you know, I think there's some pretty clear cut cases. If you've got a child who's been malnourished and didn't know where their next meal was coming from, that just is kind of a setup for, you know, unhealthy stuff later on because your body isn't getting what it needs. But the emotional stuff, the abuse, the more those kinds of things might not be the direct path. But it certainly opens the door. And also, if you've experienced a lot of trauma, your vulnerability to substance abuse and things like that is higher.
Sure.
Or that misusing prescription medication. So then that's going to open the door to health problems. So it's just, I think there's a lot of pathways where we get from high number of ACEs to later lifetime, you know, problems. But I don't think it's necessarily super clear exactly how that works.
So to kind of wrap up this episode on ACEs, Nikki, any final thoughts?
Yes. Just because a child experiences several adverse childhood experiences or ACEs doesn't mean they're doomed, right? There are a lot of things that we can do. The research is showing that having close relationships with stable adults, like their teachers or grandparents or other relatives, can make a big difference. Being, you know, able to participate in evidence-based programs for mental health, substance abuse treatment, classes for new parents, young parents, single parents, parents who have gotten divorced, you know, getting some ideas on how to manage that. All of those things can go a long way towards helping our kids. And so, you know, what we know is that these experiences, you know, do kind of open the door or increase the likelihood of problems, but they also open the door to prevention and allow us to do things that can help kids have a better future.
I feel like someone took a 1,000-piece puzzle and tripped and all the pieces went all over the place, but I think this episode takes one of those pieces and kind of puts it into the puzzle as we try to piece together this whole trauma series that we've been doing. So appreciate the information as always. And we appreciate you listening and sharing these episodes. We appreciate 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. If you want to leave us a review, we won't turn that away either. Our whole goal in starting this podcast was to start a conversation, and the conversation continues with you.